These are your must-read, stop-what-you're-doing, read-this-book-immediately, you're missing out books.
This is our gush session. We get to gush about how amazing these books are and why you should read them.
The book is strangely religious and not religious. It's very, it's an enchanting book. If you're going to go read a book and you expect, like, entertain me, Tudor Ramble, podcast, click, entertain me.
No, you just take what it's given. Take what is given. Appreciate for what has been provided.
Appreciate the art.
Problems come from other people. Often. And so
don't look at me like that. Welcome back, everybody, to the Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
And this is a part of our masterpiece series where Rich and I agree on books being not just 5 out of 5 stars, 5 out of 5 Rambler rating approved stars, where these are your must-read, stop-what-you're-doing, read-this-book-immediately, you're missing out books.
Basically, this is our gush session. We get to gush about how amazing these books are and why you should read them. This is more than a review. A review kind of is trying to go through every little point. This is, we're talking about why this is a masterpiece.
We're going to go spoiler-free for first 10 minutes, just to give you guys, if you haven't read this book, to convince you a little bit to read it. But we did this with Sword of Kaigen as well, which was a 5-star for both of us. And we're just going through this, and to say the very first reason why you should read this is Richard and I both like it. And when we both agree, either it's the worst book ever or the best book ever, and that's worth a shot at least.
I do think so. We both have very different tastes in books. Well, not very different. We have somewhat divergent tastes in books. Yes. They're the same street, maybe different sides. Right.
You like to like some bad books, and I turn and I like the good books.
Yeah, I like to think of it. I like books that make me feel smarter, mm-hmm. and you like books that are too smart for you, maybe? Maybe that's the right way to put it?
That's exactly the right way. Like, you know when a comment hurts so bad because it's somewhat accurate? That's not even somewhat, that's...
Yeah.
Oh, they wrote it. Oh, it explained so easily. I understand. It's good.
Thank you for explaining the plan for how they get into the building. And that it's great, yeah.
Nothing goes over my head in those books. But yes, Pierre Nessy... Spoiler free for this at first, Pierre Nessy is one of those special books. And Rich, you reread it before this episode, and we both read this book for our book club a while ago, and we had a review on the channel where we gave our whole breakdown. And since that review, so long ago, the book sat, we loved it then. The book sat with us, and the reason we're doing this masterpiece series, it is one of those books we think back to and go, we were wrong with how much we loved it. We love it more.
Yeah, but I on the first read, I read it physically. And then on the second read, I did the audiobook of it. Wonderful audiobook, by the way. Highly recommend. I like it more now. My emotions are heightened. The only thing that was missing from my reread is now the loss of mystery. But I still gain quite a bit in the reread for different factors. So... just given that perspective, but I constantly think about the themes that this book actually talks about. It doesn't beat you over the head with any kind of real messaging, I don't believe. It puts questions in your head and puts you in the shoes of our main character and forces you to think, how would you react? How would you feel? And what does that say about you? And that's a wonderful thing to think back on frequently. Yeah. It's been what? Maybe close to a year since we read the book first time.
Yes. About that. A little less probably, but... a little less, I think maybe close. 7 months or so.
I still think about it.
Yeah, it's not an action book. It's not a book that will, quote-unquote, entertain you. It's not going to be something... this kind of book is... we're both giving it 5 stars purely that you touched on message and theme. We're going to, in the spoiler section, go through each thought-provoking thing we got out of this book and why this book doesn't let you go.
To clarify Austin's statement there, it's not Red Rising.
I think, oh.
It's not Red Rising. It's not bang, bang, shoot 'em, fight, 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 yeah. Action book. It's a sit and think. with a very compelling mystery and characters that you want to follow.
It is a book that needs a book club. And Rich, there's no better book club
than the Tudor Ramble Book Club. If you want to join, talk books with us, you know, it's a fun community. You can join our book clubs. We also have community-led book clubs. It's a great time. Go ahead, click the link in the description below to our Patreon and join.
And even those rapscallions loved this book.
I know.
Some didn't.
Some.
The bad ones didn't like it.
Yeah, you know who you are.
But this, giving us spoiler freebies, we're talking about the meta concepts, like, hey, the message, amazing, which if they don't read this, they won't be able to go to the spoiler part. You shouldn't go to the spoiler part if you haven't read it yet. But you can. But
let's try and give the listeners somewhat, like, a somewhat spoiler-free pitch of this book and what it's about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do my best. A lot of it is dependent on the mystery, so I will try and be as vague as possible. But this book follows the main character, Piranesi, who is in a fairly mysterious place filled with lots of statues, halls, three levels. On the first level is bunches of statues with birds flying around. On the upper levels is clouds, and in below, under the stairs, is another level of these hallways with rushing waters. And we follow Piranesi through his journal entries and figuring out the mystery of why he is here, who if what else is in this mysterious world. And you're kind of piecing together that Piranesi is a little bit unique and a little bit of a mystery himself. That's it. I don't know if I can give any more without spoiling some stuff.
Right. That, to use a one-word descriptor, that's right on the cover. Unforgettably original. Okay, that's two words. Okay, to use...
Can't count.
Here's some more words, okay?
Hey, what if you put a hyphen between them? Maybe it's not grammatically correct.
Hyphen?
But...
You know, writers are cheaters when it comes to grammar.
Yeah.
They just decide what's a new
William
sentence.
William Shakespeare is famous for cheating. The English language was not strong enough for his desires, so he made it his own.
Molded it into the perfect language. These are the phrases, spellbinding, strange, and unforgettably original.
And with Austin's new form of the English language, that's actually one word.
It's one long run-on word.
Yeah. If there can be run-on sentences, if I can read books that have run-on sentences, and they've been published,
yeah,
why can't I have run-on words?
I don't like periods and commas.
No.
just give me
I don't like a book spaces. Of
words. Yeah.
Don't give me space. I want one long word.
You know what? We know what Terry Pratchett does. He says, I don't like chapters, and just doesn't do chapter markers.
Yeah.
He just says, book starts here, ends here, read.
Yeah, exactly.
I respect that strength.
No periods, no spaces, no punctuations at all. It's just one run-on word.
Right. Every new genre of song is new and fun and different because it goes, I don't like the conventions of your old song. I'm going to add jazz. Like, oh, I never thought music could sound like that.
Every musical genre is just add jazz. Take rock and add jazz.
So wherever we're going with that, if you're not convinced to read this book off of any of that, which, shame on you, we said it's 5 stars. If you don't listen to the Ramble rated 5 stars,
what's wrong with you?
This book changed my life.
How did it change your life?
When we go into the spoilers, every single message that we go through, no book has stuck with me. It puts other books, when they try to get across a message or try to get a theme, there's lots that I really like and enjoy and love just as much. But this tackles, I have 8 themes and messages to go through when we're talking about this, and you can even add on to those, mm-hmm. of how it makes me look at the world differently and reinforced the beliefs I had before more so, or made me think of things I'd never thought of before in a new way, and just tackles themes of, here's the interesting thing about the book too, of why I have 8 things down here, is we finished this book, Rich, and we got a couple big things out of it. Then we talked in the book club, and every reader...
Everyone got something else,
yes.
that was completely valid. And made me rethink the book in a new way.
Because Susanna Clark, as you put, doesn't force a message. She keeps it open enough to where you can interpret this book as being metaphorical, literal, in between. You can look at this as an allegory. You can look at this as, no, this is not an allegory. The way she writes this and lets the reader take it for how they want to is what's genius about this. Because she lets you run with it, and why, it's why it's unforgettable. And she does this in just 200 pages. And they're...
the proper length of a book. I think all books should be mandated to under 200 pages.
If the Sanderson's like fuming right now. He is so angry.
Hey, that just means he gets to make...
publish five Stormlight books per book. Because each part is a book.
Exactly. No, no, no. No more five books for Stormlight Archive. It's now 15 to 20 books.
It's, you're turning everything into a manga.
We're not doing manga here. No.
Okay. Rich, do you have anything to add before we go into spoilers of why they should read this book? Or should we just do it?
I think they just got to do it.
Go, please read this book. Even if you don't continue, don't come back, because you can only take like 10 to 15 minutes of us. I understand. Just read the book. Do something for your life. Okay, before spoilers, I'm saying the high expectation, which is sometimes bad because they're going to go, wow, Austin thinks it's life-changing. Please don't go in ruining the book thinking that like you are going to change your philosophy about life. Like, I'm saying that as in I walked into this book, that's what I actually got out of it. But it's always tough when you see two people giving it five stars that you somewhat disgruntledly, respectfully hate sometimes. But when you look at Austin giving it such high praise, go in it, let the book suck you and take you. Just don't expect too much out of it. And that's actually...
expectations are the key to disappointment.
Yes. Now, Rich, I said life-changing. Would you put any moniker on what this book did for you or what you think about it?
I'd say eye-opening.
Eye-opening.
Eye-opening is a great word for it.
I like that.
So my third eye-opening. Yeah, I felt myself awakening.
Good, good. So we gave this five stars. We're going to go into spoilers. You ready, Rich?
I'm ready.
This is spoiler warning. We're going to go deep into why this is a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Spoilers. And we're free. We're free now. The people that clicked off.
Our chains have been broken.
Screw them.
Good.
Hate those people.
Oh, God.
Who only watch the first 10 minutes and then they listen to us when we say, go off, go read it.
Silly them. Now we get to just badmouth them the entire time.
And they'll never know.
They'll never know.
It's great. It's like when we're saying something, when you say something bad about the Amish community, they'll never know.
Amish jokes are always okay.
No one gets canceled for Amish jokes.
No, they can't be. It's impossible.
Exactly. So, before we go into the messages and themes of each one, you just reread this?
Mm-hmm.
Pure Nessie's character.
Oh, God. What a wonderfully refreshing character.
Yeah.
Filled with both mystery and wholesomeness and a good, healthy amount of tragedy, but a really well mix. So, reading Pure Nessie, one, there's just initially something so charming about his look on life and his lot in it. He has the ultimate amount of humility and understanding of his... he's just appreciative. Not humble's the wrong word. You got to help me out here.
He has this ignorance is bliss naivety almost, but it's not, it doesn't come off as ignorant. It comes off as a purposeful positivity, but appreciation for his surroundings. And
yeah, appreciation.
Naive has a negative connotation with it, but he is naive. However,
there's just so many things of, I think there's some great moments where you can take it as him being naive, but really he's making an active choice to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a passive, weird mental break of him talking to the birds. And you go, oh, he's crazy. And then he breaks it down of going like, everyone talks to birds if they're annoying. I'm like, oh, shoo, go away. And when he talks about, oh, yeah, birds communicate too. They talk to me. And you go, oh, he's crazy. But then you realize, like you said, yeah, I mean, they don't, whatever they're talking about, it's pretty simple stuff. It's normally mostly, oh, is this food? No. Is this food? Oh. Like, oh, and I don't like getting wet. Like, stuff like that where you go, fair enough. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Birds are communicating with you in some way.
Right. And he doesn't close off all this out of cowardice. He's not a coward. So when you look at his actions, you don't look down on him for being naive, if that's the word. you're never looking down at Pierre Nessie. It's the strange thing of he's an adult child that you almost look up to. It's a weird mix.
Sure. It's because of the nature of the house, he's insulated from a lot of the negatives and horrors of the world. And it kind of shows, I think, a more positive nature of what man can be without a lot of negative influences or fear of a variety of different things and emotions of it's just the house. And part of this could be a question on nature versus nurture of what makes a human being. Is it their environment? Is it their genes? Is it their upbringing, their influences? Some of it, I think Pierre Nessie is an example of a quiet, endless environment. Other people have gone insane. Pierre Nessie didn't. So it speaks something that's a little different about him. This is not what should happen to everyone, but it's what happened to him. And I think that specifically is why he's admirable, because you know that other people would go crazy and other people would break down. Other people would lash out with negativity. And he embraces the positive nature of this,
yeah,
of his situation.
Yes, because he has, to me, Pierre Nessie has what helps with all that is one of the most unique voices I've ever read from a character voice, to where you could pluck his line and his dialogue out of anywhere and know, like, oh, that's Pierre Nessie saying that. And that's a good way of putting it, where other people would have broken. So it's like looking at an adult could look at a kid and think, they're naive and haven't gone out in the world. They don't know what they're talking about. Pierre Nessie's living every day, surviving in something that everybody else would have gone insane.
I'm sorry to give a kind of a morbid example, but it reminded
Never
me
Never be
of
sorry
it.
For morbidity. Come on.
Yep. I compare Pierre Nessie in a way to a kid with cancer. That often you see videos and interviews and talks with kids with cancer. They know what's happening. It's kind of been explained to them. They know that they are probably going to die, but their outlook on it is not as... There's an interesting strength that a lot of those kids show when faced with their own mortality that adults don't often.
And that's
something of, yes, the kid is young and naive and maybe not as seen and experienced most of the world, but you admire that they have great strength. And you have to think to yourself, if I was facing my own mortality the way this kid is doing, would I respond the same way?
Especially
wanting
as an adult.
Of these kids that just want to make sure that their parents are okay and they don't want their mom to cry. That's a unique strength that some children can have.
Oh yeah. And part of that being naive kid, knowing, hey, part of the strength could come from, you don't know what you're missing out on. Like if you're an adult and you've loved and you hated and you've had a whole life experience, you know what life has been like and how much you're missing out on. Where a kid has the advantage of not knowing what's outside the house, in Pierre Nessie's house, but at the same time is going through something worse than the adult ever has or that anybody else ever has. So you can't look down at them for they're not strong enough. It's the opposite. Like they're going through something that literally you don't have the tools in your life to do because you approach it wrong, whereas Pierre Nessie is approaching it correctly. And we're getting into like a lot of the themes of this book. Let's start with one. I got 8 themes. Okay.
Pick one.
The very first one touches exactly on this. It's this world that Pierre Nessie is in, this infinite hallways of statues and birds and dead people and skeletons. Is it a sanctuary or is it a prison? And that whole mentality of, hey, when you have cancer,
I do. Yes, of course.
So when something dire happens, that worst happens, cancer, or Pierre Nessie is stuck in this place forever, and Piranesi's point of view versus a worse person's point of view of looking at your surroundings and going, hey, is this, can I spread myself in the limitlessness of this, of these halls, or am I imprisoned in this house from the outside? And Piranesi always looks at it with the beauty of the house is measurable, its kindness infinite. Always looks at it positively. Or is that how you saw it as well?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's one of the more basic, or I think more obvious themes, is the difference between how Piranesi views the house and how the other, or Kimberly, sees the house. Kimberly's constantly afraid. He's not willing to explore. Constantly afraid of every bump night, and always tries to stay there as little as possible to escape. And he's terrified, and he has the route out. Piranesi doesn't have a way out. And yet he sees all the blessings and all the good things at the house. He's not afraid. He doesn't see it as a prison. And Kimberly clearly does, because he imprisoned Piranesi there.
And Orkestad, he always has some great points.
Our Patreon.
In our book club on Patreon, Orkestad made this point of your marriages. A marriage, for example, you could look at that as a binding contract that limits you. You can't go sleep with other people. Orkestad didn't say it like this, but he said you could go sleep with all these people. He didn't say this. I'm saying this. I'm filling it in for him. You could look at marriage as a restriction of you can no longer do this. You can no longer do this. You're a married man now. You're a married woman now. That's it. Done. Or you can look at marriage as not a prison, but a sanctuary. So you can look at all the space within this marriage now that you're free. Instead of looking at what did it confine you in, look at all the freedom within it. Just like Piranesi looks at this house. So if you look at anything in life with it, it's more of a message about optimism versus pessimism of what good is pessimism to you, where you're stuck in traffic and you go, oh, damn it, I'm stuck in traffic. Whereas Piranesi would sit stuck in traffic and go, oh, look at the birds. And then just that mental shift in life.
Look how blessed I am that the roads have slowed down to give me time to look at the birds and listen to more of my book.
Right. And it's easier said than done, but even the worst cases of scenario, like cancer and all of this, all Piranesi is doing is shifting perspective. Mm-hmm. It is a critical thing about mental health and also perspective and how to deal with hardships in life. It's not good to ignore reality, because I don't believe Piranesi is ignoring reality here.
That's the unique thing with this ending, especially, is he doesn't ignore it. He's ignorant of the rest of reality, if you consider the house reality and not a metaphor or whatever. If that is the case, he's not ignoring, he's just ignorant. And then once he is knowledgeable about the rest of the world and reality, he does embrace it. Reluctantly, but he does. He does go out into our world again.
Yeah.
But he does still have time to go and visit the house when he can't. So it's odd. It's such an odd thing of he's positive but not ignorant by the end, but he still keeps that positive nature and still keeps a part of who he became when he went to the house.
When people are in prison, a lot of people find God.
Yeah.
When people are in hard situations, a lot of people find God. Piranesi is showing that very human, real situation where you have the option when you're confined, when reality sucks. You can't change the fact that you have this horrible disease. You can't change the fact that you're here. Awful things have been done to you, whether you deserved it or not. Because, hey, people in prison, more likely than not, deserved it. There's
a few, but not that many.
Honestly, let them out.
Yeah, they're... It's like a 50-50.
But when you're looking at someone, whether you deserved it or not in their situation, hey, there are innocents in prison, many. In the serious note of some people don't deserve to be there. A lot of people don't. A lot of people do. So when you're looking at something, you're literally physically stuck somewhere or something bad's happened to you, Piranesi's mindset is looking at, okay, what can you control is your attitude. What can you control, instead of looking at the past, which is done, it's permanent, never changes, look toward the future. Instead of thinking about what don't I have? I don't have shoes. I don't have this. I don't have that. Like Piranesi, he still walked around without shoes for a year. Instead of looking at things like I don't have shoes to explore these halls, he would only look at what he does have to enjoy life, of these statues I take care of, the dead bodies I take care of, the birds that I talk to. Like, everything he does is another worse person would have looked at that and then made it their crucifix, because that would have drained them and they would have only looked at the negative things. They would have only looked at what they did to bring themselves here today. But Pierre Nessie is, it's a really a lesson on how to tackle some mental health. It's not, doesn't mean, hey, you just do this and everything's fixed, but this is the mindset to have when tackling difficult things in life, with a big asterisk of, no, it doesn't just mean it's over, but it's better than the alternative.
It's also a great look at how he deals with the other in the early chapters of the book, of
yes,
how he doesn't have shoes, he doesn't get water, he doesn't get changed clothes. He is living, he has to scrounge every day for just enough food to eat, or seaweed broth to drink, and trying to dry seaweed for fire. And his best friend, the other, always comes in brand new clothes, has all this equipment, all these things. And how does Pierre Nessie look at this? Of like, oh, my friend has all these things and I have nothing. And is Pierre Nessie jealous? Does he covet? Is he trying to go like, oh, that's not fair that the other has more? No, he says, oh, well, I bet the reason why the house gives the other more things is because the other doesn't know how to fend for himself. The other needs all these things,
right?
Because if the house didn't give it to him, then I would have to provide for the other, and that would be too much of a burden for me. I am very thankful that the house gives the other everything that he needs, because clearly I can.
Right.
I don't need it.
Right.
That's a wonderful lesson. Like, there's a lot of people out there in today's world, especially with social media, looking at what other people have and going like, asking about the fairness of it all.
Right. Like, everyone's saying, I don't have a BookTube channel that's cool and hip.
I know.
With some cool books behind
them, We deserve that book channel.
We need it. And honestly, you're right. You do deserve it more than us, but life's not fair. So it is, people are looking at what don't they have. And Pierre Nessie looks at, look what I do have. Look at the blessings that have been given to me. But and
he is thankful that the other person has things so that they don't have to so they're not burdened with the same challenges that Pierre Nessie is.
Yeah.
Pierre Nessie acknowledges that, like, I'm more capable, and someone else who is less capable maybe deserves that more.
Right.
A good, I think that's a very positive message.
That's a great message. And that's only the first. That just this theme of sanctuary or prison, his mindset on that, I think it's beautifully done. And it's one of the reasons Pierre Nessie's character sticks with you so much, is just that when you're touching on earlier that, no, not naive, but also not a coward, but also trying to pinpoint it. I think that narrows down, like, his mindset about the world. What does he think about the world? Is he's an optimist, but not, we'll get to the other themes of why there's more to that.
He's not a blind optimist.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things where it's masterful character work of so many moments where you could confuse Pierre Nessie with just being dumb, ignorant, naive, blind. And I don't think any of those words truly describe him, because he does look through things logically. He does try and understand. He's fairly open to ideas.
I want to talk about that next. Another theme, jump into ignorance/naivety. Of the theme of, I have down here, is ignorance bliss, tackling that theme, and his joyful perspective of being positive. What it says about ignorance and naivety in this book, what do you think on Pierre Nessie's character? Of him having this, not being a blind optimist, not just being naive. What do you think it has to say deeper than that?
Well, the common phrase of ignorance is bliss, it's understandable, but I think Pierre Nessie shows us that that's not necessarily the case. It's how you respond to information. All information, all new information can make you upset. Like, it's possible. All new stimuli, new knowledge, depending on your reaction, can make it good or bad. And so someone who does not react well, to negative news, someone who doesn't react well to maybe difficult information. Yeah, for them, ignorance is bliss. But if you have the right attitude about it, I don't think it necessarily is. I think Piranesi shows that he goes through some trouble, but it's not permanent. When he has gained new knowledge, he ultimately still comes out the right side.
Right. I love that, because I think also you're just making me think of this now, where when he becomes less ignorant, finds out new information about the world and outside all of this, something special is that I don't think we think about this often, where the term ignorance is bliss. Literally no one is not ignorant. Everybody is ignorant of something. It's just, what's your degree? What's your severity of ignorance? Are you a child who's 10 years old? Then again, there's some children I know that are less ignorant than adults.
Yeah.
So experience definitely helps you get out of ignorance. Hopefully some people double down. But when you look at how mature are you, how ignorant are you to things, when Piranesi becomes less ignorant and finds out about other things outside the house, or starts to get more information, the other's been lying to him, he doesn't let the end of the book, he doesn't become jaded because he finds out new information, which the whole point of ignorance is bliss is, hey, as soon as you find out about the real world and how bad things are, then you'll be mature enough to be depressed. That's what ignorance is bliss in a lot of books talks about, where when I remember reading The Giver as a kid, which I won't spoil anything like that, but it's one of those books that talks about ignorance is bliss. And a lot of the lessons in high school of books taught would always go, hey, the question of ignorance bliss is either, is ignorance bliss? Because once you find out things, it's no longer blissful. But Piranesi kind of flips that and goes, well, ignorance is bliss, but so is knowledge. Like, it's saying both, because he is both blissfully happy because of his optimistic attitude and not that blind optimism. But after he gets all this information, after he learns about the new world, he looks at the old world and the new world and still is not jaded, still looks at it positively, because you need a character like Piranesi that looks at both of those and goes, it's okay either way.
Yeah. Well, there's a great moment of how he treats the other and Kimberly, of when he finds out that Kimberly actually trapped him there.
Yes. Yeah.
He goes through this anger, and it's like, oh, I'm going
to
kill him.
Do you want me
to
read that out?
Go ahead.
Because it's one of my favorite scenes to get his personality, other than continue with this whole point, because he goes, he has this awkward, detailed plan after finding out about the other being bad. He goes, but of course, the other has said that he will not be here on Thursday. He is never here on Thursdays. He will be safe in the other world. That does not matter. Anger makes me resourceful. On Tuesday, the other will come to meet me. It is our regular meeting day. I will snatch him and bind him with fishing nets. With these hands, I will do it. I have two fishing nets. They are made of polyamory and very strong. I shall bind him to the statues in the second southwestern hall. For 2 days, he will be bound. He will be in torment, knowing the flood is coming. Perhaps I will give him water to drink. Perhaps I will not. Perhaps I will say to him, soon you will have plenty of water.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Referring to the flood, right? And on Thursday, he will watch the tides pouring in through the doors, and he will scream and scream, and I will laugh and laugh. So he got a little angry. But even his way of describing that is a bit awkward. It's
awkward and weird, because he doesn't really have a lot of frame of reference for his anger.
But your point, this scene to Baron, to give context, that he was feeling that anger, and then what from there?
But then when Kimberly is being dragged away by the water, about to be, when push comes to shove, Piranesi is trying to get him to climb up and get him to safety. He still has that kindness with him, even after all the knowledge about what Kimberly has done to him. Piranesi still chooses to be kind and doesn't want Kimberly hurt. That shows that that's not blind. That's not blind kindness. That's not blind naivety. He's open. He's opened his eyes, and he still chooses to be positive.
Yeah, the chooses. That's so important, because without him choosing to do that, we would look at him like, oh, you're being stupid, Piranesi. Mm-hmm. But that's a good point. He finds out and then still does it. Anyways, yeah. That's great. Because do you agree with that, the ignorance is bliss, and how this book at least tackles it? Because I just thought it was interesting that Pure Nessie, it's ignorance is bliss is always looked at, and there's either option A or B. There's no other way. It's a dichotomy, this or that. And this book kind of answers it going, no, there's really, it depends on the person. It looks at the character more than it does the theme of ignorance is bliss.
Sure. I mean, they talked about with the other characters that have gone through into the house, the in-between place.
Yeah.
And that it broke them. They went crazy and died. Pierre and Essie is dead. So for them, ignorance would have been bliss.
Right.
But Pierre and Essie is different.
Third message that I got out of this. And please add if we don't get to all of them.
Okay, yeah.
The third, just about mental illness in general. Mm-hmm. And there's three possibilities of this book. I'm sure there's more interpretations. These are the three that were talked about in the book club that kind of came about. But one being, hey, is this a metaphor for a coping prisoner, Stockholm Syndrome? Mm. So you can look at the book from that framework and go, okay, is Pierre Nessie a prisoner? And he's coping right now. Secondly, does Pierre Nessie have a split personality and in a mental institution?
Oh, we're talking about the literal aspect of how to take this book.
Exactly. Yes. Literally, how do you take this book? Do you take it as he's the coping prisoner and take it that way? Or a metaphor for a coping prisoner? Or is he a split personality in a mental institution? That's literally what happened. Or is this about a cultist and a cult follower that doesn't know any better? So all the things that we're talking about around this message are going like, hey, is assuming the fact that Kimberly and took him here and is going off of that message of this is how he's dealing with it. Now, you could take the book literally in many different ways. Is he a coping prisoner? Does he have split personality in a mental institution? Is he a cult follower who's finding out his leader's been lying to him? All of those, you can read into valid interpretations of each and every one of those and more than just that.
Oh, yeah. I got to be honest, when we first read the book, I took it literally, of like the fantasy book of there is this other place, and I took it at its face value. But when the others in the book club said like, oh no, I thought it was more of a metaphor for like Stockholm Syndrome.
Right.
And the house doesn't exist, that this is a coping mechanism for Pierre Nessie. Honestly, yeah, you can take it that way if you want to.
It really makes sense.
I'm just, how did you initially take it?
I initially took it as I thought she left it open for interpretation being literal or metaphorical. And what I enjoyed is that I interpreted some messages some of the ones we already brushed on, but I enjoyed that the answer wasn't given to me. I left thinking like, I don't know. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the fact that I was looking up some Reddit forums of people going, hey, I solved Pierre Nessie. This is what happened. And their whole theory makes perfect sense. It's like, oh, yeah, the detective was there. It probably was a cultist. And then other people in the comments going, like the top comments of those Reddit posts saying, I see your point, but this and this. And also, what about this that makes it a complete metaphor? Yeah. And I enjoy that. It's more of a metaphor than that. So I just like that it doesn't spoon feed you one way to do it. And hey, if you read going in like, oh, this, your expectations again can go into this book thinking, hey, it's a fantasy book, so it's probably a real endless hallways. That's probably what it is. Some people take it as less of a fantasy and just more of literally a metaphor. And I think some of the reviews on this as well, I can't give every interpretation, we can't, but there's dozens of interpretations. So when I left, my response to was it real or not was, I don't know. I really don't.
Fair enough. I felt it was real. There were some details to me that made it feel more real. The thing that threw me more for a loop is Raphael, the police officer at the end.
Right.
That's where I start questioning some stuff of, was it really real?
Right.
That's where some questions come in.
Definitely. And those are the reason those are brought up too for is it literal, is it metaphorical, is all the talk about mental illness. Like, is this a metaphor for Stockholm Syndrome? So you can kind of take it in these different ways, and it says something about each of those. Or it says, sure. It explores the mind of someone that goes through that. So that's a whole other way to interpret the book.
Which I think that interpretation is that's probably less positive of a message than the one that we were talking about before.
Exactly.
Yeah, because then... if this is not just Pierre Nessie in an unfortunate situation. And not just unfortunate, like, he was put there by the other. But he looks at his surroundings with positivity. You turn that on its head and it's like, no, he's actually still, he's just trapped and he is coping with it. And it's Stockholm Syndrome. That's different. Right. Like, yeah, you shouldn't be positive in that. You shouldn't give in to that delusion.
Right. And that's why the message can literally be flipped on its head on the opposite side if you interpret the book that way. And then go like, okay, this is a warning. Or that's just, oh my God. Love this book. I love it. It's okay. So another message, a fourth message to go through is trauma and victimhood, which bounces off of that one. Mm-hmm. And to emphasize the point that it could be a coping mechanism, or this whole book could be a metaphor, is this is from, I found this online where I didn't notice this when I read the book initially, but at first Pierre Nessie dates conventionally using 2011, 2012 and so forth. It's not like, that's not the first part in the book, because the first very thing you see in the book is when the moon rose in the third northern hall, da, 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 right? So, but it's mentioned in like the first chapter or so.
The first two-three-ish books of his journal was
actual dates.
Yeah.
And then it says it loses the dates. That it no longer says 2012. The next day after that is the year of weeping and wailing. Which, why is it called the Year of Weeping and Wailing? Does that mean it's symbolic for something traumatic happened to Pierre Nessie between 2012 and this next day? What happened that'll be the Year of Weeping and Wailing, and why is that titled it? Because the next title after that is the Year I Discovered the Coral Halls, then the Year I Named the Constellation. So did something happen between 2012 and the Year of the Wailing, something with amnesia, something with the traumatic, something that was...
Was that the moment he ripped up the pages from his book?
Exactly.
He was wrote all this stuff about Kimberly, of who he is and what he's been done to him.
Right.
Did he make a choice of like, I'm stuck here, I want to forget it.
And right.
Tosses that part of away. And tosses, instead of constantly thinking about what he's lost, he now makes the active decision of, no, this new place is now my home. I'm no longer trying to go back. I'm no longer trying to get revenge. It is done. That part of me is past.
Over.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, Kimberly adds a whole, the other adds a whole nother element to the story of what are his intentions? What is going on with him? Because in this victim interpretation too, you could look at Pierre Nessie and you could look at Kimberly as, hey, is Kimberly a serial killer that killed all these other, but that's why there's dead bodies in the halls, and the halls, like, again, halls being a metaphor.
I'm assuming most of them were the other. Not the other, but the first doctor. The one that was locked up in prison. I think he killed a few more.
Got it.
That was the interpretation, because they were lost during that period of time. Mm-hmm. Kimberly, I think it was only Pierre Nessie that he trapped. Maybe there's one other person, but
maybe, anyway. Right. But yeah, just looking into, is this a trauma? Is this a victim story? Is this looking at how someone deals with trauma as well? So again, getting off all of these, we can go even into more interpretations, but going to another overall message, which I know this might be the biggest message you got out of it. I'm curious to see if it changed, because I think you mentioned this last review, where how we should treat our surroundings in the world.
Yeah. The how beautiful it is on how much Pierre Nessie cares about the house and how the house provides for him and he looks after it. And more so that he does frequently say how the house desires to have a witness, to see its beauty and to appreciate its blessings. Which is a really touching way to look at it, which, again, I'm not a Christian. I've talked with Christians. I have Christian friends. But part of this is, I'm bringing up, is a lot of that, it does center around like the Christian God. I think other religions would follow a similar way, but hey, Christianity is what I vaguely know, on how God wants man to see the beauty of the world and to appreciate the kindness that God gives. And like that, a lot of like why you are praying is not, you're not praying for stuff you want. You pray for what you appreciate. You pray for your blessings. And like, I am thankful. I am blessed that I have been given this already. And so Piranesi, I think, takes that in more of a more abstract route and not directed to any particular religion, but he is appreciative of his world and tries to take care of it. And even
whereas,
the little things.
Whereas the other comes to the world and is trying to get something from it, trying to explore and trying to get, what can this world provide to me?
Sure.
Piranesi is looking, what can I provide to the world? More, you know, the JFK quote of, ask not what you could do for your, what
now, you, ask you could not
do for
what,
your country can do what for you, but what you could do for your country.
Yeah.
Change country to your world surrounding environment.
Yeah, you can swap out the planet for really anything. Mm-hmm. If you're at a job that you're currently at, don't just ask what the job could do for you. You ask what you can do for your job, because especially if you're at a job that is helpful for the community, you serve an important role, it's good to be kind to others in that role.
Ask not what you could do for your what your friends can do for you, what you can do for your friends. What can I do for you, Rich?
You can help me move
nope,
in a couple
nope,
days.
Nope. Actually, unfortunately, I have to. I'm obligated.
Yeah.
We're moving. There's going to be a different set soon. A little sneak peek if you're far into this video and know that. So you're going to see a new set.
I will say, lighting comes second.
Yeah.
We'll get the new set and the new bookshelves. It's going to be in stages.
It's going to be a fun time, though.
It's going to be fun.
They're going to see us in a new environment. Our surroundings will be different.
Our surroundings will be different, but our attitudes will remain positive.
Oh yeah. Yes. But hey, with this bookshelf and treating books, how should you, not what the book can give to you. Can we divot this into the next theme and message from this? And we can talk about both of these at once. It's the how we should treat our surroundings and world, but also has an entire message about expectations. The book and the spoiler-free part, how I was mentioning that, hey, we gave it 5 stars. Please don't let your expectations get in the way. The entire message about what you could do for your world of Piranesi's treating the dead, appreciating the birds, the statues, writing down, making sure everything has it's all written down and diaried, essentially. So Piranesi's treating his world positively. And he doesn't expect the world the world doesn't owe Piranesi anything. The other thinks the world owes him something. The world ought to give me, I need to find out what the secret is to this. Whereas
the world has an answer. I'm going to find the secret deep knowledge that the world has to offer.
Exactly.
And it's just for me.
But
Piranesi says, no, the house is not valuable because of what it offers. The house is valuable in and of itself. Full stop. There is no secret knowledge that is just there for it to be taken. It's the whole itself. So when you walk around the world, and when you talk with other people, it's not what other people can do for you. People are not just means to an end. People are beautiful in and of themselves. They are the end goal.
The book is strangely religious and not religious. It's very, it's an enchanting book. It's just, you can take it so many ways. I don't know what to do with this little thing.
Yeah.
So exactly that with expectations. And we could take that, all these messages from the very first one, see it as a sanctuary or a prison, whatever interpretation of the book you want to take. You could take each of these messages and just connect it with something in your life so easily. With the sanctuary and prison, it's a marriage, a friendship. With expectations, it's a book you read. If you're going to go read a book and you expect, entertain me, Tudor Ramble, podcast, click, entertain me, laugh monkey, dance monkey.
I demand this joke. Make me laugh personally, and it better not be a joke that is kind of at my expense, because then I'll be upset. No, you just take what is given. Take what is given. Appreciate for what has been provided.
Appreciate the art we give you on Tudor Ramble. This is just a way of us Stockholming people into liking our stuff. It's not going to work, but the point of going and expect that your expectations are, what's that common saying? Expectations are the setup for, high expectations are prime to lack of enjoyment. There's a simpler term for that I'm missing.
what's the word? You can't be disappointed with what you don't expect. I don't know.
Comment down below. You'll let us know. But letting your expectations get in the way of enjoying something. And on the opposite end, maybe when you really love something, some of my favorite movies is just this random crap I throw on that I have no expectation for. Mm-hmm. And then blows me away.
Yeah.
And that's the best feeling because it exceeded what you put in your head the standard to meet. That's simply it.
There's many ways where if you give something if you have expectations for something and it meets or exceeds it, it's really satisfying. I think it's equally satisfying when you don't have expectations for something. You actively make the choice to say, I'm going to let it be whatever it wants, and I'm going to judge it on that. I'm not asking for it to do something. Everyone kind of has that subtle little ask in their head, like, I'm really hoping that this comes up. I really hope that, you know, I'm in the mood for this, and I want it to do that. And you see a character, and you go, oh, it'd be great if there's – I hope that person gets to do a cool action scene, whatever it is. You kind of have this subtle expectations always going on in your head.
Right.
Even in life in general, when you meet a new person, you have expectations of what you want, what type of relationship you may want with a person. Often that's not a way to go about it. Don't expect those things. Don't have expectations of it. Just treat it in the now. What is a relationship with someone else? Maybe it becomes something different, but don't expect and don't have these great expectations.
Brian, maybe you have something to say about idealism versus realism as well, because when we're talking about expectations, we can very easily say that for a book. Okay, don't expect too much. But Pierre Nessie, if extending his message to parenthood, let's say Pierre Nessie's father, you would expect a father and a mother, you would expect a parent to provide for their kid. You would expect a parent to do, there are certain expectations set about the parent, a responsibility that goes outside like simply reading a book. And Pierre Nessie, I think, says something about this where it's not, because his message is about the world and your surroundings interacting around you and caring for other people. So there's somewhat of an expectation for Pierre Nessie to be a good person, defining what good person is, of course. So would Pierre Nessie look at parenthood and be like, hey, does your parent owe a child anything? Does the child owe a parent anything? Or would it just keep that to the realm of the physical world? What do you think Pierre Nessie would say about something where expectations are clearly there because of the importance of parenthood or because of anything else?
He calls himself a precious child of the house, and the house provides for him. In his mind, the fish and the birds and the water, the clean water, and the seaweed especially, come as gifts from the house, and that's the house providing for him. And Pierre Nessie is expected, or he expects of himself, to care for the dead of the house, to appreciate the statues, and to clean up what he can and give thanks. So in many ways, maybe Pierre Nessie would say both, that the parent has an expectation of care and responsibility to the child, and the child has an expectation or responsibility to be appreciative and to acknowledge that kind of effort.
So you're saying in both ways, Pierre Nessie is saying don't expect to get that, to take something from the house, but he would expect something from a parent-to-child relationship. What do you think about that?
In both cases, the expectation is not on what you will receive, it's on what you will give. It should be expected a parent should give love and care for a child. On the reverse, child should be expected to maybe not give and take something from the parent, but is maybe expected to give respect, give appreciation for a job well done. All this talk about Pierre Nessie focuses on giving. What can you give to the other?
That's not a great clarification. You can
take from someone.
Just like when going back to the book analogy, it's not a reader going into a book saying, or a podcast, Hooter Ramble, saying, hey, give me, or I'm taking entertainment from you. I want to take this entertainment. I want to, from this book, I want to take, give me this, rather than what a reader should do is get, you should give the book a due diligence, or you should
give the book your patience,
a chance.
Give the book your
attention.
Your attention.
Give it the bare minimum. Give it as much as it is given you.
Yeah.
So,
and if the book does please you, then you give a review. Give your appreciation. You give the book to the next person so that they can enjoy it, and you can pass that joy to the next person. So you appreciate, oh, this book gave me joy. I want it to give others joy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all focused about what you can do for others than what they can do for you.
Right. So always expect to give, but never expect to receive.
Expect to give more of yourself to others than what you will receive from them.
I think we narrowed down that message. That's what it is, and what Piranesi's is getting at. Because it's not saying expectations just aren't there and don't do that. Otherwise, Piranesi wouldn't do anything himself.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. And another two more messages here.
Okay.
One of them being the very ending, which you alluded to earlier. Actually, you didn't allude. You literally said it. Allude's probably not the right word, but you said at the end where he does go out into the real world, a part of that message is, as much as he's appreciating his surroundings, part of his reason for leaving was he was alone there. And he has a message about, as regardless of how much you can do as one person, there is an importance to, it's almost a selfishness if he stayed in that house after knowing there was an outside world, because one person alone can't do much. The more people there are to appreciate your surroundings and to give to, the better. Mm-hmm. It's a can't do it alone kind of message. Because a message at the end here wasn't screw everybody else, it's only me in the world.
Yeah.
It's going a step beyond of saying even after figuring out this blissful ignorance, whatever you want to call it, in the house, even when discovering this new knowledge, goes out there and goes, no, this is more important than the beauty I had back there, is doing this with others.
I think so. There's something about, now I wonder if we take this as a COVID-19 type deal.
Mm-hmm.
Just basic example of how we were all locked down in our houses and we're socially isolated. And then after that's released, like, you kind of go out and like, oh, cool, get to go out with people. But there's also a part of you miss that time you got to spend alone. And
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a mix.
Like, you
of
miss
both.
Having an excuse to not go places. Like, oh, sorry. COVID. Can't hang out with you, Rich, again. Whoopsie. Now I have to come up with a real excuse.
It's odd because maybe this is not everyone, but it's being by yourself can be very calming. Of like,
yes,
people can give you headaches. People, like, problems come from other people often. And so
don't look at me like that.
The quiet nature, sometimes being by yourself, is very comforting. But yeah, it is a bit selfish. It's ultimately, man is not meant to be alone. We are social creatures. We should be doing things for other people.
And how many, to pivot into the very last message of this that I got out of it that we talked about with the book club, art and beauty, of Piranesi being observer of beauty itself, and how other observers, when Piranesi leaves to see, have other people in the world also appreciate surroundings. There's this one paragraph here that I'll read off and makes me think that a lot of this book is a meditation about art as well.
Mm.
This is, so Raphael in the book says this, Raphael, and just to give context, Raphael and Piranesi are having, do you want to give more context? Having a conversation?
Raphael is the police officer that was trying to find Piranesi and eventually was able to come into this other world, the great house, and found him and rescued him from Kimberly.
And Raphael and Piranesi are having this conversation. Raphael says, here you can only see a representation of a river or of a mountain, but in our world, the other world, you can see the actual river and the actual mountain. This annoyed me. I do not see why you say I can only see a representation in this world. I said with some sharpness. The word only suggests a relationship of inferiority. You make it sound as if the statue is somehow inferior to the thing itself. I do not see that that is the case at all. I would argue that the statue is superior to the thing itself, the statue being perfect, eternal, and not subject to decay. The debate between Raphael and Piranesi, Raphael saying, hey, there's the real thing out there, and then Piranesi, which a bit of Emperor Soul messaging, if you want to talk about Emperor Soul another time, right? But Piranesi saying, hey, the representation of the thing is the copy is as beautiful as the original. The representation of beauty and the work that was put into this statue can be just as beautiful as the thing it is copying because it is also mimicking beauty. You know, like, what do you think about all that? What do you think about what Piranesi is saying, and what takeaway do you have on the meditation about art in this book?
Well, it does remind me of Plato's, not Plato's Allegory of the Cave, it's Plato's...
The chair thing.
Oh, God. Someone in the comments is going to correct me and call me stupid. But how Plato...
Theory of form. I looked up Plato's chair thing, and it's the first thing that came up.
Yeah. No, the Plato's theory of forms of how there exists in somewhere the idealized version of something, and that it is, if, say, a chair. There is a perfect chair, and the things that we see in our world are mere reflections. And it's in many ways, maybe Piranesi is kind of seeing it that way, of the statues are the perfect idealized form, and everything in the real world is a mere reflection of the perfect statue in the house.
Right.
So that's kind of how I'm looking at it, of often a painting of something can give you more insight than the thing itself. Maybe not all the time, but there's something interesting about when you look at a beautiful mountain range, it is you looking at the mountain range versus you look at a painting of a mountain range. You're not only you seeing a still shot of it, you are seeing a mountain range through the eyes of someone else. Us being social creatures, I think that is of a particular value, of being able to see something through someone else's eyes.
Right, and all paintings, so we talk about Impressionist era and all art. Yeah, exactly, all art. The Impressionist era with Monet, and you kind of had this lighter brush to things, is all artists are doing are showing you the world as they see it. And Piranesi is appreciating that the beauty itself, but also the eyes of those observing the beauty. Because beauty is something. It's there regardless as what I think Piranesi is saying. On top of that, the beauty is almost... you add purpose to the beauty by having observers. So the rainbow can be beautiful, but without people to experience the beauty, what good is it? Without having these souls around you, a more religious message of without having the humans here to enjoy Earth itself, who could appreciate God's fruit? Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, more of an atheist way of looking at this, an agnostic way of looking at this is, well, beauty can be here regardless, but without people and humans to...
We wouldn't have the definition of beauty. Beauty is just what we determine.
Make of it. So I think, again, Piranesi so perfectly makes it so you could take this on a more religious note or not. And to me, looking at art that way is just it both talks about the theme of is beauty in the eye of the beholder, and is beauty there regardless of the beholder, in a way that I can't argue with it. I really like what it has to say about looking at the way Piranesi does. I totally see what Piranesi means, and also makes me think about, regardless of the bait, is beauty in the eye of the beholder, is beauty there regardless? Piranesi's point of people observe beauty in ways that are also beautiful. That's why art is beautiful. That's why we like things, because it's not the beautiful thing itself. Yes, it's beautiful, but did you look at it the way they did? Because with our book club, we've mentioned it 20 times now. I'm sorry. But with our book club and the different perspectives people have had on how to interpret this book, their interpretations were beautiful. Like, using that word beauty, of they had their eyes saw something I didn't. And so now that all of us came together to discuss this beautiful piece of art, Piranesi made this more beautiful. So in a way, the way Pure Nessie treats his world and the way that we're reading this book is we add value somewhat to the beauty itself, which is beautiful regardless. We just are discovering its beauty in different ways. Fuck me, I love this book.
The beauty of the house is immeasurable, and its blessings.
Oh, kindness. You almost had it, buddy.
Kindness. Infinite.
And we didn't even talk about the prose and the we just kept it to the themes and the messages of this book, and oh, that Lord. Floored us.
Oh yeah.
And just to sprinkle on a small conversation at the end here of the entire book is so immersive. Like the reason all this works is you are lost.
You're locked immediately. In. You're locked into the world.
Yeah.
It's one of the best aspects of this book.
And the character voice of Pure Nessie, Susanna Clarke writing Pure Nessie here, perfection. This book from start to finish, it is not, we talked nothing about the scenes of like, oh, remember when Pure Nessie went to go kill the other? Oh my God.
Oh no, the plot exists, but it's not interesting because of the plot. It's interesting because of Pure Nessie himself and how it is written, what Pure Nessie's reactions to things, and especially because you, the reader, believe you know more, and you do know more than Pure Nessie. And so it's a backward mystery of you already know the end of the mystery. You know who it was the butler with the candlestick. You're watching to find the main character figure it out.
Right.
And basically from the first page, you know something's wrong with the other, and that's the fun. That's the real fun of this book.
And Rich, I will let you finish us off with the last line just to help you out there, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it, even though I just read this book. The beauty of the house is immeasurable. Its kindness, infinite.
And if you're kind, you'll give us a little like and subscribe.
Yeah. Bye-bye, y'all.
Bye, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.